for a moment. I'm going to hit the high points with the presentation that she has provided us with. I'm fortunate enough to have worked with her long enough to basically be inside of her head. We think with the same brain a lot, so I don't feel at a disadvantage in terms of talking about this. And just to give you a connection to her particular position, again, she is a team lead on the Elder Rights Team of the Administration on Aging, which is now up under the Administration for Community Living. And what we actually asked her to talk about is the context of the public health interface with elder abuse as it relates to the existing field where most of the responsibility for dealing with this lies, as well as to talk about the multi-sectoral collaborations that are happening, that are needed, and the future of elder abuse is itself in relation to the public health approach. So what I'm going to do is hit the high points with this, and then we'll try to transition as a last step to the connection to the 10 essential functions and the core functions of the 10 essential services and the core functions of public health. The obligatory disclosure slide. One of the things that we want to deal with in terms of this presentation is a process that moves us from talking about the traditional response to elder abuse up to a point where we start to deal with public health as sort of a non-traditional contributor. I think we can also understand the logic of that. When we talk about what's traditional, I want you to think about the fact that there's a particular set of group that has legal responsibility for dealing with this. They tend to be, depending upon the state, adult protective services, agencies, and agents. So what typically happens is that when there's a situation that might involve elder abuse, it tends to be reported, will be originally framed as suspicious, and then what happens next is that adult protective services actually investigate the allegation if certain types of conditions or criteria are actually met in the situation. So two of those particular criteria are listed there on the slide. They have to, in some situations, meet a particular legal threshold for investigation to be initiated. And also, and this is one of the things that sometimes can get a bit dicey, you have to have consent of the alleged victim to do anything. And so sometimes we know that's problematic because if there are power dynamics at play, the person may not actually give consent because they may fear that if they do so and things don't go the right way, they'll be subject to more abuse in a given situation. So that's one thing to think about that actually is a little bit of a hitch when it comes to the investigation process. Also, what I'd like for you to think about that could happen next is that there might be several different pathways that the process could take depending upon what's present, where the information is concerned. You might, for example, have referral to social services given for a particular victim, depending on the nature of the case itself. There might be some law enforcement involvement, again, depending on the nature of the process and what the victim has suffered and the perpetrator has actually exposed him or her to. And lastly, there may be some arrangements put in place for emergency housing if it's a situation where the person has to immediately be withdrawn from some situation of immediate danger, imminent danger. And so I guess given what we know about this particular subject matter, this is something that we could all see being basically straightforward in nature. When we talk about this process, there are some things that are obviously going to be missing from the traditional approach. One of them is the fact that the intervention that we just framed there tends to be focused on the aftermath of the situation. It happens after somebody has already been hurt, something has been taken from them, they've been abused in some way. Also, I want you to think about how when we talk about this idea of service referral, it tends to focus on social services for the victim. What's often missing for this particular phenomenon, as well as the broader scope of violence, is the perpetrator gets left out of the situation. Their needs, for example, may not be addressed in terms of trying to take them back to a position of functional contribution in a larger society. And lastly, one thing that I want you to think about that Stephanie also put on this slide is that there really isn't much consideration of this interaction as a dyadic or potentially triadic situation. We can think about the number of different situations where multiple people may be involved. People tend to think about the victim side, but they don't think about how characteristics of the victim as well as the perpetrator may combine to create a circumstance that might make abuse more likely. Lastly, the adult protective services situation is one where what they're typically tasked to do is to intervene to stop it right then and there, but in many situations, they have no capacity or ability to provide follow-up services or to even check on the person that they might have actually pulled out of an abusive situation. So, when we summarize some of what I just said, the next thing that's also very much relevant for what we're talking about, there's not much emphasis on prevention. A lot of it tends to be responsive in nature. I just said that a few moments ago. When we start to move towards public health's position in this, what we bring to the table is more of this emphasis on prevention. that's something that I think we all can smile about because we tend to do that well in terms of public health's contribution to America's overall health status. This focus on prevention itself tends to be focused on a variety of different levels and a variety of different things that we can move and motivate towards the statuses that we want. But some of those include shifting people's knowledge about the phenomenon. It might also involve situations where we try to put people in situations where they develop skills that might be helpful in intervening, changing, or even avoiding situations of abuse. And lastly, we have a role to play also in shaping attitudes and views about the particular phenomena that we choose to focus on where our topics are concerned. So in other words, one thing that we try to do alongside this situation where we change the phenomena that are emphasized here, we try to understand things such as the characteristics of those people that tend to be affected. Demographics tends to come to play in this situation. We try to get more information about the victim-perpetrator relationship and the characteristics of that interaction that might have contributed to a given situation. And lastly, we also try to compile, collect, and disseminate data about severity, cost, and impact so that you get a better understanding of how this affects the larger society. We talk about that in public health in terms of public health burden. More about the public health approach in terms of what you guys may already know in terms of what we bring to the table is this framework for talking about abuse, neglect, and exploitation that also involves different levels of prevention work, intervention work, and interaction. So we can think about how in some situations there's a need for universal prevention. In others, an indicated preventive intervention might be more appropriate given the characteristics of the individuals involved. And one thing that public health does bring to the table that is highlighted in this presentation is this contribution to primary prevention, where what we try to do is actually keep abuse from happening in the first place so that there's no victim and you don't have a perpetrator to actually have to deal with in terms of their prosecution or some other punitive situation that might be forthcoming. When we talk about public health and its place in the field of elder abuse, there is one particular location where I think we actually have very much a lot of entree to. That involves contexts where multidisciplinary contributions have been recognized as being vital. So one example of that involves what I refer to as multidisciplinary teams. I'm sorry, I get a little tongue-tied every time I try to say that. Perfect. But if you think about it, that particular setup is perfect for public health because by design, it involves people from a variety of different sectors and situations. And a lot of times what winds up happening is that you have a confluence of people who often are dealing with the very same people just from different perspectives and trying to address different needs in a given situation. Okay, so you can understand what this particular type of situation is all about. It's designed to pull people together who have a lot of insight and a lot of value to bring to the table so that as we address the needs of the same population, we do it most effectively and most comprehensively. What does public health offer to this type of setup? Again, we bring prevention to the table in the midst of a field that a lot of times does tend to focus on response after the fact. So this idea of primary prevention and enhanced secondary and tertiary prevention becomes key to think about in this situation. We also have a pretty deep experience with work that involves other forms of violence, breaking the cycle of violence with respect to things like child abuse, for example, which we mentioned earlier, as well as intimate partner violence, which is something that is a focus of the work that we do at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, for example. And lastly, one of the strengths that we have particularly, which I'll highlight a little bit more in my own presentation, involves data collection. Public health surveillance is essential to really get a better sense of what's happening at a national, state, and local level with this particular phenomenon. If you don't have the numbers, and I know some people say numbers aren't all, we don't like the numbers, get us to how you fix it. Well, you can't fix it if you don't know what the problem looks like. You don't know where the problem is located if you can't characterize who's contributing to the problem in a given situation. And we know that surveillance information helps us paint that type of picture, which then allows us to proceed in a more focused manner. So at the final part of this particular slide, we do have also a lot of expertise with respect to programmatic delivery, particularly in the areas of disease prevention and health promotion, where health promotion is a vital framework to think about because it involves a comprehensive whole community approach to thinking about how you actually come to address a particular problem. So my friend Stephanie chose to highlight a lot of this information to give you that type of connection and context to the aging services piece of things. And what she wanted to actually leave you with as a reminder, as people who are playing roles in the public health sector. Just a few points that are highlighted here. We have expertise in a variety of different areas. Sometimes what happens, particularly in the work that I do, primary prevention tends to be the only thing that we focus on trying to bring to the table. But we have skills in other areas, and we can also contribute when people have been abused and have needs with respect to things such as recovery and rehabilitation, for example. We can also think about the fact that public health can, as I just highlighted a few moments ago, help with some of the questions that have been highlighted here in the center of the slide. And one thing that I think is most important, what we bring to the table is a perspective on the specific issues and areas of interest that public health professionals have to be sensitive to and aware of if they're going to deal with the population that's also being responded to by some of the groups that typically have responsibilities in the aging services network. So in sum, what Stephanie wanted us to get a good sense of is how our work actually relates to some of those groups that are responsible primarily for service provision to help preserve and protect the health of older adults. So I hope in my quick presentation that I haven't done her presentation a disservice, but I think that she does a very good job of beginning to transition us to how at a systemic level, at a system level, we can begin to work towards dealing with this particular problem. Okay?
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you. I was joking with Mary. I told her Stephanie forgot to send me the dress to wear while I did the presentation. So.
It looks good.